Welcome to the Wealth Building Made Simple podcast with Philip Washington Jr. Today's episode is brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com. Today, Philip talks about Bitcoin as conservative money, part one. Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. And now, here's Philip.
We are back with another episode of Wealth Building Made Simple, brought to you by Podcast Mansfield, the best podcast studio in Texas. And I don't even got to mention the rest of the world, because Texas is the best place to be in the whole world. So all you got to do is be the best in Texas, and you're automatically the best in the whole world. So Podcast Mansfield, where they can produce, edit, and record your podcast. Also, brought to you by Stonehill Wealth Management, where we help people take their money from here into the future with the least amount of tax and inflation drag as we can do, which I think we're pretty good at. Now, let's get into the episode. Today, we're talking about, we're going deep into sort of like finance, right? I've been evolving my thoughts around finance continuously, right, over the last 3 years. And so, I keep iterating around similar ideas, trying to help people wrap their mind around this idea more, because it's like changing, right? Just like media completely changed, the way that we buy and sell completely changed, finance is completely changing. And those who are not understanding the change are going to end up like the mall owners who said, oh, this retail thing, I can still do what I want to do, right? And that changed. Mall owners, big retail people, news organizations and media organizations that are still struggling, they didn't take social media seriously and like they got hit, right? And so like finance is changing. Now, if you're not American, then like what I'm saying to you about some of this stuff is already understood, because you most people who are not American have lived through a terrible banking system that you can't trust. I'm not saying ours is terrible, but I'm just saying some of the hidden problems in our financial system are the reason for political distress, financial distress, right? These rising prices and why home is unaffordable. So pay attention, get some notes, and let's talk. But I'm gonna start way back. I try to always do and kind of bring it up, is humans have tried to store value across space and time for a long time. Meaning, like, I want to save some money for my future old age, and want to leave some money for my children's children, right? That's way back in the spiritual text that I refer to called the Bible. And so that's been a challenge that we've been trying to solve for a long period of time. The best stores of value have always been scarce assets like art, right? If you find, I don't know when Basquiat was around, but you got like Basquiat, Van Gogh, right? All these famous artists that painted things a long time ago that are worth tons of money today, right? You have collectibles, all these ancient things that we find in museums that are worth, a whole lot of money. Gold, right? Gold is the asset that I've tracked, and it's held its value across space and time, pretty well. Real estate is one that's held less value, because unless you were like a reserve currency country that was like the dominant one and won the wars, right? Your real estate didn't really survive. So like, for example, like there's still some homes in the United Kingdom, that are, pretty high value where rich people live, where poor people live, they're less valued than they were. But if you're like a winning country that's, one of the hundreds that is the dominant one, and then you're bought real estate where rich people continue to migrate, then it protected. But that's a really hard game to play, right? 'Cause there's a lot of countries but if you just bought gold and held it and took care of it, it held across space and time. But the other stores of value that we have had, and they were more temporary, were stores of value that needed like laws, violence, manipulation, and collusion to prop up their value. So like, for example, you know, let's take real estate for an example. Yeah. Dallas has zoning way more than Houston. I grew up in Houston. And so like zoning affects the prices of real estate because if, for example, they put a restriction on where housing can go in a certain city and everybody wants to live in a city, that's going to push up the price of housing, right? Because because it's a government mandated law that causes the price to rise. And I'm not talking about the intention on whether they are trying to do it or not. That's not what I'm saying. There's designs and other reasons, but I'm just saying laws and regulations prop up values, right? Violence, right? You use this currency to pay your taxes or else, right? Manipulation and collusion, right? That's, you know, as these companies get really big and they begin to have people copy their value proposition, right? Then the companies begin to collude, lobby, do things to protect their monopoly, right? Again, I'm not making a judgment on any of these things. I'm just stating like what actually happens. And so like that can hold up a value of an asset for a period of time, but over a longer time, it goes away and it ends up, when you net inflation, it doesn't do as great as you could think, as you might think. So for example, you take like a utility company, right? And you look at owning utility companies over the last two decades, right? They got a monopoly, right? But have they really made much above inflation? Not government stated inflation, but the real cost of living, which I estimate is about 7 to 10% a year for the last, you know, 20 years, probably longer, but 20 years, probably not. Right. But they have a monopoly, but you know, it's not a monopoly like Apple had over the last year where it was a growing monopoly that was not really being challenged. It's being challenged now, but so those are ways that we've propped up store values. And from a finance standpoint, it causes you to think about how you allocate money. So like, for example, am I saying like, don't invest in companies that don't invest in anything but gold or art or collectibles, or like when I'm talking about Bitcoin? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like, understand the time duration of how value is stored. So let me talk about in the way that rich people think about finance. I'll use that way. So if you're wealthy and you understand everything I just said about how the system works, and then you go, cool, like we have money that we got to pay for things in, right? Because I want to be a good citizen and I want to pay my taxes and I want to pay my employees and suppliers who use the currency, who got to pay taxes too. So I got to use the currency and I want to be a responsible citizen. So I'm going to have enough currency to pay my bills in the short term. But in the long term, okay, now I'm going to convert my assets based on my time frames into things that have that conservative money that is scarce and can't be manipulated or created more of. And so what do? I say, okay, that's going to be those things like gold, Bitcoin, art. However, there's still a lot of money in shares of company or in real estate in the shorter term. So for example, you take innovative companies, right? You might say, okay, I have money over here protected where I know it's going to have a good chance of protecting its value, but I see an opportunity, right? Let's pick a company that I like right now. You take a yoga studio and you go, okay, I see an opportunity for yoga studios to become a big part of society. And I think that it's going to provide an attractive enough return over the next decade as people become aware of the idea for me to make some money, right? So I see the opportunity. I see the value it brings to society. I think it meets my investment hurdle. So what am I going to do? I'm going to like I'm going to look at my savings stash, which is saved in things that are scarce. I'm going to look at my Bitcoin, my gold, even this, you know, even real estate, right? Because real estate may not be a good hundreds of year transfer of value, but it may be a good 50 year transfer of value, right? So you look at your real estate and then you go, cool, I'm going to borrow money from these assets to invest in this new venture, right? Which is a whole level up because I don't got to cash out now. I can just borrow from my savings. And that's a whole conversation, but I can just borrow from it or you can cash it out. But let's just say borrow because you don't want to trigger taxes and you don't want to give up your return and your money. So you borrow from it and then you invest in the project that you think will be a good return that will that the market is not aware of yet. So you do it and let's say you put in $1 million, right? And so you put in your million and as you are right, people, you know, buy from you, you pay your expenses and you have excess money. And you say that excess money in your hard currencies, right? Your Bitcoin, your gold, your collectibles, your hard asset. And let's say in a decade from that $1 million investment, you've been able to save $10 million worth of money from the business into these hard assets, right? Now, at the end of a decade, this is important, at the end of a decade, right now I'm saying yoga studios and some people are going, that doesn't sound good or not, right? But I feel like I have insight. A decade from now, when I actually have the proof of the money being made, I mean, everybody floods the market with my idea, right? They come in, they say, oh, this is a good idea, right? Because what are humans like? Humans like proven paths, right? So once it's been a proven idea, everybody jumps in and creates, I go from one yoga studio in my community to 100. And lots of money. And so that makes the value of my studio worth less, right? Because it's more supply. Supply and demand. It's more supply. So the value of mine is less. But I'm cool, right? So what business owners typically do is when they get that pressure, they begin to like borrow to stay competitive. And they like debt themselves, you know, into slavery. I already understood the economics. And this was a short-term gift to the market anyway. So I like, you know, served my clients, made them mentally healthy, took out $10 million, converted it to hard currency. When the competition comes, I'll just sell my equity to somebody else, take that money, put it in hard assets. So now I took the million, I made $10 million, you know, converted into hard assets. Now I'm at the end of that decade and I got $10 million, right? So now I'm going, now how do I want to play this next decade? Like what else needs to be built, right? What's the next version of innovation that I can help, right? It may be, hey, yoga and meditation was what helped this decade heal their mind. Let's say a decade from now, as we built that out, maybe there's VR headsets and things that could take us to another level of meditation or whatever, right? Again, at that point, I'm looking for things that the market doesn't really appreciate. So they may say, that's a dumb idea. Fine, right? I'll take 3 million of my 10 million that I made, borrow from it, invest it in the project, turn into 30 million savings, right? And then you just keep doing this over and over again. And so that's what I feel like investing in the short term is about. It's about being creative and being productive and bringing a new solution to the market that people are not aware of. And that gap in the value you bring and the lack of suppliers is your profit. And then you take that profit and you convert it to hard currency, right? Because you know if you're right on your hypothesis, there's going to be a bigger supply of companies. And you also don't want to save it in your long-term savings in the bank because, like, we know that they're making the value of that stuff go down 7% a year every single year. So you don't want to do that, right? And then when you look at the hard currencies, you can say, you know, do I want to do gold? Do I want to do real estate, right? The preference for me is the hardest, most liquid currency. And that's why you see a lot of people owning Bitcoin, because real estate, right? If the, you know, California created this, what was this, millionaire tax or something like that, and just created the value of properties that were in that threshold, right? And there's some people moving to California, like the politicians can screw up your real estate. Regulations, if they open up, that can mess up your real estate. Because there's plenty of real estate we can build up. There's lots of, people say there's not going to make any more real estate, but there's plenty of real estate for 8 billion people. So like all they got to do is open it up or change our preferences, and then it makes the value of the real estate in your area go relatively down. And then they say gold. Well, gold, we produce 2% a year, right, with our current technology, right? But there's there's like so much gold in the sea and everywhere that as we advance our technology, if we were able to do it now, it would make the price of gold be like worth not a lot because there's so much. We just don't have the capacity to do it. And there's plenty of asteroids flying around us where we can like mine asteroids, which we probably will do. So it is technically difficult to mine right now, which puts a constraint on the production of gold. However, you know, it's, you know, those two are decent options. But the hardest to me, the hardest and most liquid in my savings is Bitcoin. It's only going to be 21 million, right? And once you do your due diligence and you go through and you do your technical understanding of the protocol, you realize, man, nobody can manipulate this. It's only going to be 21 million and it's super liquid. And there's financial markets being built around it where like I, you know, there's plenty of companies right now where I can go borrow against my Bitcoin to get some money. And there's going to be more and more. There's going to be competition, which brings rates down. And it's going to extend the duration to where one day I'll probably be able to do like a 10, 20, 30 year mortgage against my Bitcoin to go buy some stuff because that market is forming, right? It happened with, you know, real estate and other forms of hard currency. So that's the thinking of why Bitcoin is so transformational. And the other part to think about too is, you know, some people think this is going to happen in a year, 2 years, 5 years. Like most of this stuff happens over like a generation, right? So I would, you know, like I think Bitcoin won't be questioned 40 years from now, right? But in the interim, it's going to be, it's like China. Like in 1970s, all the way until 5 years ago, America questioned China, you know. Then 5 years ago, everybody's like, oh, wait, they're like a rival power. You know, like it happened like that, but slowly over time. Same, you know, same with this alternative, you know, economy where people are looking for places to store their value with strong property rights and where it cannot be, you know, where your value can't be watered around by government creating more to spend and or competition, which destroys shareholder value but benefits society as a whole, right? And the last part is that's the most beautiful part is when the system works that way and we invest money in the short term to create more productivity, to lower cost to consumers, right? It lowers the value of the shares of the company that produced it, and the goods and services get lowered in cost relative to the hard currency. So it means if you're saving in the hard currency and everything is, the supply of everything is becoming more abundant, the supply of companies who produce it, the supply of the production, right? That's going down in value relative to your hard currency, which if it's fixed, like Bitcoin, it's going to be 21 million, right? That means like your savings can buy more and more and more and more and more things with less effort as the system works the way that it's supposed to work. Like things are supposed to trend towards abundance, not the other way around, but the thing that changes it is the money that you save in. And since most of us save in money that doesn't move very fast relative to inflation, it feels like things are getting harder, right? I'm going to do one next week where I price energy costs in Bitcoin, gold, S&P, and you'll see, oh man, that stuff got cheaper relative to harder currencies because everything is relative. Like that's the mindset shift that people have to think is there's like stagnation, like what do you call it? What's the word? Stability, right? Stability is a fallacy. There's no stability. Everything's always in flux. I mean, literally, like if you want to go nerd on physics, everything is literally always in flux. Stability is it's like a fallacy. Like there's no stability. So people who fear volatility, it's so volatile. Well, everything's volatile, right? You just may not, it just may be fakely volatile for the temporary moment, which traps you in a false belief system. And by the time you wake up from that belief system, you're super poor, right? So like, don't believe it, you know, move with the times, right? Have clear, focused eyes, and you don't have to worry about all this stuff that inflation and job security and all that kind of stuff if you just move with the times. Hope this helps. Until next week, you enjoy yourself.
Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.